can't say.
What's that word you use?
Spoilers.
I like that word.
Hello and welcome to Spoiler Nation, the podcast where we have spoiler-filled discussions on your favorite and sometimes not so favorite movies and TV shows. This episode, we continue our deep dive into Game of Thrones Season 7, and we're talking about the fourth episode, The Spoils of War.
I will fight for you. I will fight for the North when you bend the knee.
My name is Howie, and I'm the senior editor at IsolatedNation.com. And today, I'll be joined by the Onion Knight himself, Sir Reese.
What's going on, you Game of Thrones nerds? Very excited to talk about this episode.
That was very Davos-like.
Yeah, I tell them like it is, just like Davos does. Yeah. Don't suffer nonsense. I just say the truth.
You have that same flea bottom accent.
Exactly. I'm a man of the people.
Yeah. Oh, shit. What an episode.
Yeah, not much happened, did it?
Nothing much. Like just
You know, middle of the seasonitis, I guess, where... No, of course not. Are you kidding?
Yeah, you know, it's your typical filler episode.
Full of goodness.
Yeah, obviously, this episode is jam-packed with...
Spectacle.
Character development.
It's fire and blood.
Yeah, gold.
Yeah, maybe? Maybe it's gold?
Some gold, yeah. You know,
gold is a point of focus at the start.
Yes. Okay. Because of, you know, there's so much to talk about this episode.
Yeah.
Let's structure out this podcast here. You know, let's break it down.
Delineate into, the storyline.
Yeah. Bite-sized chunks. Mm-hmm. What we'll do is we'll structure this episode around the location that this episode was set in. So we will begin with Winterfell and then head on to Dragonstone, and then we'll end with what used to be Highgarden. Let's say that.
Like the episode itself, we'll save the best for last.
Yeah, and then after that, we'll dive deep into theories and possible book spoilers.
Got a couple of really interesting ones. You want to stick around for those. I don't know how many people know about these theories and stuff, but I actually just heard this important theory today, and it blew my fucking mind.
Okay.
I'm excited to talk about that.
Well, yeah, consider that a teaser,
A little preview of what's to come.
All right, so Winterfell.
Winterfell, Stark reunion again.
Okay, I think I have to start this part by saying, you know, I'm kind of eating my words a little bit because the past few weeks, either it's with my friends or at the office, people are, you know, obviously there's like speculation that Arya was headed towards Winterfell.
Yeah.
And that's really the reunion that everyone's excited for, a Stark reunion with Arya.
Yeah.
Whether it's with Jon or with Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, especially in the office, I'm just touting like, no, this is Game of Thrones, bro. We don't deserve good things. It's too good. Like, at a reunion with Arya.
Are you saying Arya would die on the way to her home planet? Like Poochie in The Simpsons?
I just think somehow, you know, she would get there and then all the Starks wouldn't be there. Or just, I didn't think it would happen because it's just too good to be true.
And the foreshadowing was kind of there in the second episode where she sees Nymeria and Nymeria turns away from her.
Exactly.
I thought that was some creepy foreshadowing portending to she either won't make it to Winterfell or she won't be accepted.
Yeah, and you know, I was so confident, I would even say, hey, I'd put money on it that Arya will not reunite with any of the Starks.
And then before you know it, just one scene, Arya is outside of Winterfell. Next scene, she's literally just walking in there.
That's it.
Faces two guards who are like, ooh, fuck off.
Yeah. You
know, a little kind of comedic back and forth.
The show toys with our expectations a little bit because this is it, but it also toys with our kind of learned sense of hopelessness.
Yes.
Because of what we've been through with the Red Wedding. You know, Arya always plagued by these almost meets, almost reunions.
Yeah.
Like when she, you know, she came all the way to the Eyrie to see her Aunt Lysa.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died.
Ah, that's right. I forgot about that.
She was pushed through the moon door. Little did she know that Sansa was in there. So that's a double missed reunion.
Yeah.
And just that laugh that she... that cackle of...
Like despair.
Of hopelessness.
Yes.
That she had was just reverberating throughout, you know, the series. And you just can't help but think, oh, shit, just get this right. Just get this right. When she just meets the two guards at Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was going to kill them.
That's what I thought too. I mean, they kept telling her to fuck off and stuff, and you're like, you know what she's capable of.
Yeah.
But then there's like a great scene where like a guard attempts to punch her, and she dodges it like it's nothing, which is a great little setup that gets paid off later. Yeah,
amazing.
It's pretty amazing. And, you know, she gets in there pretty quickly because, like, she, like, reasons with them. She's like, hey, you know, either way, like, if they turn her away, it's not good for them.
Yeah, that's a good...
And they don't seem like the sharpest tools in the set.
They don't.
They just seem like they're literally, like, mall cops.
Well, you know, they're from the north. What do you got?
It's very dreary and dumb up in the north.
Yeah.
But fucking Arya, I think this is the best time for her to come back, not just because of delayed gratification and whatnot, but this is the first time in the whole show where it feels like she's completely in control of her destiny. Like, she has the most agency she's ever had.
Definitely.
So I think it's, rather than someone taking her home, she comes home herself, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and she's pretty much in straight away. And she's, like, looking around, and they play that, you know, Winterfell theme.
Yeah,
and
the Stark song, I would say.
And I describe her face as ambivalent.
I think she's looking around, and, it, you know, it's that thing of, like, oh, this is the same, but something has changed.
Which is obviously
her. Obviously, you know, Winterfell has been kind of broken down and built back up.
Yes.
So, doesn't, you know...
Like, she brings up Podrick Payne and Maester Luwin.
Yeah.
You know, like, her, both of who are dead. And they were obviously very important in her childhood.
Not even the guards knew who they were.
Yeah.
Because they were like, hey, the Maester is someone else here.
It's crazy how much has changed. And, you know, she comes back to Lady Sansa being in charge of Winterfell.
Yeah.
And you remember, of course, in the early episodes that they had, like, a broad relationship.
Yeah, as siblings do.
Yeah, especially girls who are completely different.
Yes.
Yeah, as they are. So they greet each other again as completely changed by the experiences they went through.
Yeah, so let's go through it. Because when the guards are bickering, you know, hey, you should tell Lady Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
And finally when they decided through, like, a threat.
Yeah.
They turn around and she's gone, and you're like, shit, we missed it again.
Yeah. Did she leave?
Yeah.
Did she come all the way here just to leave?
But they go up to Sansa, and there's just this great scene where they explain to her, you know, who she was asking for. And they're like, oh, it was probably no one. What did they say? Like some north,
yeah,
some
like
winter.
Some nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. And she smiles and she goes, oh, I know exactly where she's going.
Yep.
And it's in the...
It's a crypt.
The crypt. Yep. That's right. The Stark crypt where... Obviously, Lyanna's statue is in, and mm-hmm. now they have Ned's.
Yep. Arya's in there, and Sansa comes in as well. And at first, they sort of exchange a little kind of pleasantry or a little joke.
Yeah, and you kind of think, oh, why is it so cold, you know?
I mean, because they're both immediately trying to establish a power dynamic where one has one over the other.
Mm.
Especially when she's like, do I have to call you lady now? And Sansa's like,
yes.
And she doesn't say it lightly.
Mm.
And so they go in for a hug, and it's sort of a cordial hug.
Well,
not only did they never have the best relationship, but they're greeting each other as essentially strangers now. They're nothing like they were before. But it sort of lightens up as they keep talking, and they realize, you know, we're like the last children left. They talk about their father, Ned.
Yeah.
That's the thing that essentially bonds them, is their memory of their father.
In some ways, Ned failed them.
Yeah.
Ned left them at King's Landing, you know?
Mm. Nest of Vipers, he called it.
Yeah.
You know?
And Ned tried to protect them from the darker, dirtier world, as Sansa puts it in the first episode.
Yes.
And by doing that, by not being honest with them,
mm-hmm.
and that's really what cost them.
Yeah. I love how even so far into the series now that the specter of Ned
still hangs over.
Hangs so heavily.
Especially the Starks.
Yes.
Obviously, we see it with Jon all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jon is really the true kind of successor of Ned. You know, he's fueled by his sense of justice and his sense of honor.
Yeah.
But this interaction between Sansa and Arya, just in the way that they talk about him, it goes beyond that. It's different from when Jon talks about Ned. It's a kind of sadness that only Ned Stark's daughters can have.
Yeah. That's an interesting observation, actually. And I like how that sort of brings them together eventually.
Yeah.
And then Arya goes in for like a proper hug after they have that discussion. And then Sansa lets her know, hey, Bran's here. And Sansa says it without any happiness because...
Yeah, she's like, kind of like awkward.
Bran's not Bran now. But he is much closer to Professor Xavier in that wheelchair.
I'm digging the wheelchair.
I do like it. It makes him seem kind of semi-impressive now.
Yeah.
He's not just being carted
hauled around by poor Mira.
Poor Mira gets fucking, like, he throws it in her face. Presumably the last time we see Mira. So should we just get into that real quick?
Let's get into it. Let's start with Littlefinger.
Because that's where the scene begins, yeah. Actually.
So yes. We get a cut to the meeting.
I think
the reunion. It, you know, it's nighttime and Littlefinger, obviously. Oh, another Stark. The one true male
calls
heir.
Him the Lord of Winterfell.
Yeah, he's playing his game now. You know, it's like, forget Sansa. I'm just going to roll my dice with this Stark.
Yeah.
His strategy is like, oh, I'm just going to treat him like a kid, which he is.
Yeah.
But that's Littlefinger's strategy, which is like, I'm going to give you this thing.
He plays the role of a dad.
Yeah.
He really takes advantage of the fact that Bran has no more parents and he's so young by saying, I would have taken the dagger for your mother if I could have.
Yeah.
Only a father would say that about his wife to the kid's mother kind of thing. So he's suddenly trying to buddy up to him like that. But it doesn't even register for Bran,
No. Obviously,
because Bran literally knows everything now. And so he quotes back to Littlefinger something Littlefinger said seasons ago to Varys in private.
Yeah, because he said,
this is for you. The last man who wielded it meant to cut your throat, but your mother fought him off. The other dagger, the one that took her life. I would have stopped that dagger with my own heart if I could have. I wasn't there for her when she needed me most. But I am here for her now. To do what she would have done. To protect her children. Anything I can do for you, Brandon. You need only ask.
Do you know who this belonged to?
No. That very question was what started the War of the Five Kings. In a way, that dagger made you what you are today. Forced from your home, driven out to the wilds beyond the wall. I imagine you've seen things most men wouldn't believe. To go through all of that and make your way home again only to find such chaos in the world. I can only imagine.
Chaos is a ladder.
He just blurts it out.
Yeah. I love how the actor who plays Bran, Isaac, delivers the line like, he knows Littlefinger said it, but he doesn't know the significance it holds to Littlefinger.
Exactly.
He just sort of blurted it out, and Littlefinger freaks out.
Because it's like control.
He's panicking because he's completely lost control of the situation.
He's shocked.
And he immediately excuses himself from the room. He's like, thank you very much, my lord. I'm not a lord. Like, Littlefinger gets pantsed in that scene.
Yeah, because he said immediately, it's like, control F, chaos is a ladder.
Yeah.
Boosh. And we all know this line, because this is what he said to Varys.
And in many ways, that's his philosophy. So that's why it's such a memorable line, because if there's a line that defines Littlefinger, chaos is a ladder.
Yes. And this is an interesting scene, because it kind of parallels with the scene between Varys and Melisandre. Another scene that's between a political animal and a mystical all-seeing being. And clearly, Varys doesn't believe in the mystical side of things.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't trust it.
Yeah.
And in that scene, Varys is disturbed by what Melisandre said to him.
And Bran, Melisandre says it so casually.
Yeah, and it also pertains to him. Because what did she say?
I have to die in this strange country just like you.
Yes. Varys's face, he's just like, ugh, what?
I wish I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And it's the same with Littlefinger. He's shocked. He's out of his depth here, because all he knows is the political, you know, Game of Thrones. That's all he knows.
No one catches him off guard.
Yeah.
And he's caught off guard quite clearly.
Yeah.
So he leaves and regroups, presumably.
Yeah, because Mira steps in
into
the room.
And she's like, my place in this plot is done now. She doesn't say that, but that's really
She's like, I'm done being
being your mule. You know?
Yeah.
I gotta go to my family. I have a family. I've lost my brother already. I need to be with my family now because there are bad things coming.
It's such a tragic scene because
she's
right. She's risked her life to save him.
Yeah.
Her brother died.
Yeah.
And Hodor died.
Yeah. And she says, you know, I don't suppose you need me anymore. And Bran just says, I don't.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's horrible. I feel really bad for her in that
scene. And because he says, thank you. just very, like, he cordially.
Says after she looks upset, though.
Yeah.
Like, she almost has to wring that out of him.
Mm.
And, you know, she leaves not on good terms with him, I'd say.
She
feels bad for him because she's like, you died in that cave.
Yeah.
You know, after you inherited the three-eyed raven role.
Yeah, I think it may be the masochist in me.
Mm-hmm.
I like that this is the season where we get what we want, but not really, not quite. You know, it's like, okay, we didn't want Bran to die, well, some of us anyway. And he doesn't, but really, it's just a shell of Bran that we see.
Yeah.
And color me cynical, but the fact that Arya is reunited with the Starks actually spells worse things to come, in my opinion. Yeah. The fact that they would allow us to have this moment of happiness means that some shit's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Something's gonna go down.
Yeah, I mean, it's no mistake that they keep the tension between Sansa and Arya right until even the next scene where Arya sees Bran.
Yeah.
And Bran obviously, like, gives Arya the dagger.
Yeah.
And Bran even brings up the fact that Arya has a kill list, which Sansa laughed off earlier. So Sansa's like, oh no, she does.
She does. It's for real.
Yeah, it's not like a joke, you know.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, within the sense of Bran gives Arya the Valyrian steel.
Yes.
And you have to wonder, what does Bran know at this point? Can he see the future? Is that what he sees? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he gives it to her and looks at it. He has that worried look. I don't know. There's this look on his face that's like, it's as if he knows that, okay, this Valyrian steel dagger has to be with Arya.
The blade that kills Cersei, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it's kind of set up as.
Okay.
I would say so.
I mean, I'm into that.
Yeah. Because that blade was a Lannister dagger, wasn't it? It was Tyrion's dagger or something like that.
You know what? I thought it was Littlefinger's dagger all along.
Yeah, it might have been Littlefinger's dagger. Bran gives Arya the dagger, and the idea is again brought up. It's brought up every time you see Arya, I'm going to kill the queen.
Yeah.
The queen is who I want. So that would make a certain amount of sense to me. And like, he can detect the significance of that, even maybe if he doesn't entirely comprehend it. He can't comprehend everything that's happening. So then after that, we get like a neat scene with Brienne and Pod again, you know, just seeing them milling about Winterfell.
Yeah.
And once again, Brienne is kind of reminded of her, not uselessness, but you know, she's tried, but she hasn't entirely succeeded.
So they see the Stark siblings.
Yeah. And Pod's like, isn't that great? And
yeah.
And like trying to make her feel good. And he's like, I didn't do it. Like, thank you, but no.
Yeah.
So then we get like a classic Brienne and Pod sparring scene where, you know, she's whipping the poor boy with her skills.
Yeah.
And then Arya just kind of comes up and she's like, hey, you want to spar? And it was interesting because I'm thinking, when's the last time we saw Arya like fight someone one-on-one?
Yeah, it's with the Waif.
Yeah, that and we didn't see that fight on screen.
Oh yeah, we didn't.
Arya just like takes out the candle
and then
dies off screen.
Well, before that, they had the practice blind fight.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that was the last one-on-one fight.
And it was just when she was just training.
Yeah.
So now she gets out her little needle against Brienne's big broadsword. And Brienne's like, oh, isn't this cute?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'll indulge this small child. And
she nails it.
Arya's first few movements, Serio Forel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see it.
It's like water. It's like pure elegance in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of the Oberyn versus the Mountain fight, in which there's like a similar thing with a little person against a huge person. And like little person's flipping around ninja style and all that stuff.
Yeah. She even twists the dagger in kind of reminiscent of how Oberyn, you know, spins the spear around.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, you're right, because Brienne has that hulking figure, like her movements are stiff.
Yeah, powerful. You
know, powerful, but stiff. Whereas Arya is like water.
Yeah.
It's a great line when she asks, who taught you this? And she said, no one.
Yeah, that's very cute.
Great line, but I was kind of disappointed because it's like, really? I would say Syrio taught you this.
I mean,
more than what, you know, what I saw, especially how to handle a knife.
Yeah. Syrio kind of gave her like the formative lessons of how to hold a sword properly and stuff. But I don't think they trained together that much. That was kind of short lived.
Hmm.
But he did like give her the, you know, formative experiences or whatever. But no one is a cleverer line than Syrio.
I know.
So we gotta go with no one. And who remembers Syrio at this point?
I do.
I love
Never
him.
Forget.
Not today.
Yeah, not today.
Yeah, I do miss that kind of presence of like a pure sort of children's fantasy character.
But of course, there's that theory that, you know, Sirio is no one.
Faceless man.
Yeah, but well, that's a I think it's for another day.
Yeah, I think that's past it now. Yeah. I think they're done with the faceless stuff, unless it's to do with Arya.
Which I'm glad they are.
I'm fine.
I'm happy to not see Jack and Hagar again.
I am fine not to see dimly lit rooms with, like, vague dialogue.
Yeah, and just, like, illogical rules of, you know...
You gotta kind of make leaps, I guess.
Yeah.
But now...
Anyway.
Yeah, that kind of comes to Arya being this, like, super assassin... ninja now.
Yeah.
And I love how, like, Brienne gets frustrated and just kicks little Arya with her foot. Like,
yeah.
She loses her temper a bit. And Sansa and Littlefinger are looking
walks
down.
Past.
From the Queen's perch sort of thing.
Yeah.
They're looking at the fight. And Sansa, how would you read her expression during that fight?
Yeah, she... Okay, she seems concerned.
She seems concerned and frustrated. Like, oh, fuck. Like, that's sort of how I
really,
read it.
Really, I feel like...
She didn't look pleased. She looked anything but pleased.
Yes, she wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could mean a few things. I see it as, you know, it could mean that she's disturbed in a way by, you know, how much she doesn't recognize Arya anymore. Maybe yep. She's just compounded from the kill list.
Yeah.
And she talks so much about killing, and then now Sansa gets proof that she can do that.
Yes.
And maybe she's disturbed by who she once saw as a spunky, lively character is now a killing machine.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it. But what did you think?
Yeah, I sort of read it as disturbed as well. And I did see sort of a bit of like anger on her face because it's like, I get my sister back and she's just a killer and Bran is just this weirdo. It's like, I got my family back finally after all this time. But... they're so far away still in many respects.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what I interpreted as her frustration. But Littlefinger, of course, looks at her.
Looks so smug.
Oh my God.
I hate him.
He's like, this is the one I can manipulate.
Yeah.
And Arya sort of gives him this look like, hey, how you doing? Like, you know.
Wait, you think Littlefinger thinks, oh, I can manipulate Arya?
I think that's what he's thinking. Because he tried it with Bran, didn't work.
Didn't
Sansa
work.
Is, like, rebuffing him at every opportunity. So I think he's going to try something with Arya. Anyone is, like, open to manipulation, it would be her, I feel like.
No.
She's, like, vengeance and her desires are so obvious. And Littlefinger, that's kind of perfect for Littlefinger. And Arya doesn't really know Littlefinger as well.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, you're right. We'll
to
see
me,
because...
it'll make the most story sense because you see him failing with Sansa. You see him failing with Jon Snow. You see him fail with Bran. Like, what else would his purpose in the story be? If it's not to do with manipulating Arya, I think the writers don't know what they're doing with Littlefinger.
That's the thing. I kind of like to continue with the theme of him failing with all the Stark children because I like the story of him, you know, he was at the height of his powers last season.
Yeah.
And now he's just not getting it. This is not his world anymore.
Yeah. That's why I feel like he would be killed off if he can't manipulate Arya because his purpose would be done.
I think this might be where it's going, which is he tries to manipulate Arya and... something gets revealed about his involvement in Ned's death.
Yeah.
Something bumps him up into the
that.
Top of the list.
Yeah. She kills him.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense.
We'll see. But that's... yeah. I'm not willing to put my money on it because I've been wrong in the past, clearly.
You never know with this show, especially with a character as unpredictable as him.
Yeah.
So let's shift to Dragonstone.
Sunny seaside Dragonstone.
Oof, the picturesque Dragonstone. Yeah. Literally picturesque. There are pictures, guys. We'll go into the pictures.
Yes.
In actual Dragonstone.
Very good segue.
The most conveniently placed pictures of all time.
I saw there's a meme on Reddit, obviously, of Sir Davos and Jon in a cave. Like, hurry, let's draw.
That's terrific.
Like, with a chalk. Because they're convenient. Okay, this episode is the best episode of the season so far, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree with that.
And it's because it highlights all the best parts
of Game of Thrones. Yeah, I agree.
You know, you've got the action, you've got the awesome battle scenes, you've got dragons, but you also have these amazing character moments.
Mm-hmm.
So even, you know, from the top of this, Daenerys and Missandei walking down the steps...
yeah.
And she's worried about Grey Worm.
Yeah. Dany picks up on that immediately.
Yeah, and she's like, yeah, he'll be back.
Yeah.
You know? And then she asks, you know, what happened? And Missandei was like, many things.
They have a little friendship moment, which serves later when Missandei says to Davos, you know, we chose her as a queen. We want to willingly follow her.
Yeah.
And I think that scene sort of reinforces that Daenerys sees them as equals, like as friends.
Yes.
Especially
definitely.
Missandei.
Especially her, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that tempers where you think Daenerys might go in future episodes, but we'll focus on here for now. And we'll go to the cave where Jon shows Daenerys the cave.
Yeah.
And it's full of these like ancient drawings of the children of the forest and the White Walkers.
Yes.
Very well designed White Walkers too. They looked very, like everything else is a stick figure and the White Walkers are like concept
perfect.
Art.
Perfect, perfect.
It's
yeah.
like a wallpaper on like a laptop. Like they're the White Walkers. You cannot mistake them.
You that, could literally see, like you could literally recognize the Night's King.
Yeah.
Like on.
He's like in the middle of it.
You could see it. You could see, oh, that's the Night's King. I can yeah. recognize his face.
And you sort of get like this undercurrent of light flirtation between Jon and Daenerys.
Yeah,
scene.
This is an interesting scene, and I think this is really the real scene that we see Jon and Dany actually interact with each other, because
yeah.
the first one that they met, it, there was a lot of
formalities over.
Yeah, it's like the first
they're
date.
They're like, they're on guard.
Yeah.
Don't know each other, and they don't like each other that much.
They've definitely got chemistry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I think Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke, not the best actors on the show, but...
But hey, pretty people flirting goes a long way.
And I think they work off each other so well that I think it works. Like, they actually kind of elevate each other's acting. And especially in the scene, it's kind of romantic and it kind of has, I don't
There's
know...
There's a gentleness to it that yeah. I really responded to. Even when she's like saying to him, you have to bow, like bend the knee to me, it still feels like a weirdly intimate scene.
Yes, just because in the cave and there's like a glowing flame and it feels like a mystery. It feels like they've stumbled upon a potential treasure.
Yeah, they found it together kind of thing
yeah.
and they're exploring it.
It's exciting.
Yeah, and they, you know, it's like another cave scene where Jon bent the knee to Ygritte.
Yeah, good callback.
That's what I was kind of thinking of, because it's like, hey, remember when Jon was in a cave that time? So now
yeah.
it's like this time it's... Different circumstances, obviously, but the undercurrent is there.
You can see that clearly they're attracted to each other.
Yeah. So they leave the cave and Daenerys is probably mulling over more seriously the White Walker thing. I think she'll need more evidence.
Yeah.
But that's not enough. It's on
ready.
Her mind.
Yes.
And she gets some very fucking terrible news when she exits and she finds out about the failures from the previous episodes.
It's a great line because you see Tyrion there just so guilty. He's got his guilt face on.
Yeah.
And she goes, what?
Yeah.
Emilia Clarke, great comedic timing this season.
She gives those withering lines so perfectly.
Yeah,
like
it's
when
so
she
good.
Delivers them, I feel like I'm shriveling a bit. Like, oh,
yeah.
I don't want to make her mad. I feel fucking so low.
And he goes, oh, we took Casterly Rock. And it's such a funny line, the way she delivers it. She goes, yeah, that's good, right?
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Ah, it's like she's about to be like, job well done.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, you know, we've lost a fucking fleet and they're stranded there now. And
she's pissed.
She is pissed off
she's
at him.
Pissed.
And she brings up this great point, which makes up a flaw in the last episode for me, where she says to him, you don't want to hurt your family or something like that.
Yes.
And it made me think, yeah, maybe that's why, like, he's kind of sucking at strategy, because deep down, he doesn't want to hurt his family. Jaime specifically.
Mm.
He is torn, and that plays in later into the battle with the dragon.
Yeah.
Where he's literally, like, watching the battle, and he's so concerned.
He's literally just looking at Jaime, and he goes, like, don't do it. Like...
Yeah. And there's a brief scene where he sees the devastation, and, like, the violin is sort of emphasized. So we're seeing the point of view of the battle, and it's not like a victory for him. It's like a sad thing.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there. But I thought that tied in really well when she brought up that point. Like,
yes.
You don't want to hurt your family.
Yes.
And that was very astute of her.
Yeah.
That was a great observation.
Dany really keeping track of the motivations of the people around her.
Like she did with Varys.
Yes.
Early now, it's with Tyrion.
Yeah. She's not the kind who would be easily swayed by, let's say, someone like Littlefinger.
No way.
You know?
Yeah. But there's a great moment in that scene as well where she's weighing her options. And obviously she's thinking about using the dragons. And there's this great shot where in the distance the dragons are flying.
Yeah.
And they're making light noises. It's almost like they're calling to her.
They're ready.
They're ready
for battle.
That's on her mind. And when she says, enough with the clever plans, like, oh, you know what's going to happen next season.
Yeah.
Nuclear bombs. So
she's like got her hand up. Over the switch.
On the button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting scene because Tyrion obviously tries to dissuade her from this, just like he did in episode one.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work anymore because he's lost all
credibility. He has no ground to stand on. Yeah, no money in the bank.
Because she's like, you lost me my allies.
Yeah, like...
Your plan did that.
Yeah.
And she turns to Jon.
Literally the nearest person, anyone but Tyrion, you. Like, she just pulls him, like, what should I do?
Well...
But it shows a good implicit, she trusts Jon.
Yes.
Already.
Yeah.
You know?
Because he's just a good guy.
He radiates a kind of a decency.
And so just...
That's why I think she trusts him implicitly.
Yeah. Especially the next words that come out of his mouth, because he said, he paints a good picture, and I'm like, where's he going with this? And then he takes it home with like a Jon Snow-esque line, because he's like, you made people believe in the impossible.
Yeah.
And people will believe that you do something impossible. But if you take your dragons and you take the kingdom by burning down buildings and killing innocent people, you're more of the same. You're no different than anyone else.
More of the same of the Mad King specifically, who loved to burn people.
That's so Jon. It's just seeded in goodness that harkens back to Ned Stark, really.
Yeah, exactly. He has no dog in that fight as well.
Yeah, exactly.
His motivation could also partly be, save those dragons for when you really need them, which is the White Walkers coming. Don't just have them in some piece of shit battle where they could, like, die over a kingdom that's probably going to fall anyway. So maybe there's some strategy behind that. But you know what? He isn't the sharpest tool. He just speaks from the heart.
Exactly.
And he was really speaking from the heart when he said that.
Because, yeah, Ned Stark is known for his... for his brain.
Yeah, exactly. Got a big heart. But anyway, she's kind of cuts from there, so you don't really know what decision she makes.
Yeah, and before we move on to the big event,
main event,
there's a little event that happened before that, which is our boy Theon Greyjoy.
It's a very quick scene.
Washes up to shore.
Yes. Yeah, great scene.
This season also has centered around these meetings or reunions that we all want, but they are also giving us these like side reunions that are sometimes more interesting. And this is one of those moments because I was like, how is Jon going to receive Theon? Is he going to be happy? And then you realize, oh no, he's not.
It's all over his face when he sees him.
Yeah.
And I really liked Alfie Allen's delivery. It's like he's so full of shame, but he's trying to, like, keep his pride as well.
Because Jon hasn't seen him since post-Reek.
Yeah.
So he's also trying to channel, with all his strength, like, old Theon.
Yeah, that's why it's such a heartbreaking scene
it's
for me.
Sad.
Because he's really trying, and it's like, oh, you're just not the same guy anymore, and you probably never will be.
Yeah.
I feel sad for you. And then Jon, being pretty honorable, he says, you know, if you didn't save Sansa, I'd kill you kind of thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't kill him on the spot. Which, admirable restraint, because for all he knows, he killed Bran, and he's partly responsible, at least, for Winterfell...
Burning to the ground
yeah. for, like, a couple of years. So, good on you, Jon.
Yeah, and I like that none of the Greyjoy army... they just stood there and watched him...
Yeah.
...get beat up.
Yeah, because they're, like, they have contempt for him for leaving Yara.
Yeah.
No one's respected Theon.
I guess Theon is headed to King's Landing.
Yeah, I guess he is, yeah. That was just the only scene he was in this episode, right?
Yeah.
Just meeting Jon at Dragonstone Shore.
Speaking of King's Landing...
We get a brief King's Landing scene.
Yes, a nice check-in with Cersei.
Yep, the Iron Bank guy shows up, and he's very impressed.
He's still there, you mean?
He's still there, that's right. They're still talking, and he's like, well, you've got all the money already, because Jaime had stolen the goods from Highgarden, I guess.
Yeah.
So Cersei is like saying, okay, now we're paying you off. I just want to focus on getting Westeros back together.
Yeah.
She's like, I want everyone on this continent under my control.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, I can deal with that.
I like how immediately he's like, yes, can we help you with that?
Yeah.
Like a sleazy fucking banker. Like he's just like, may we help you with this venture?
Just like some loan shark.
They are loan sharks, essentially. I like how Cersei kind of falsely compliments him by saying, you're very kind, my lord. And he's like, I'm neither kind nor a lord.
I like this guy.
Some dry little comedy there.
Yeah.
So it essentially cements Cersei's victory from the last episode, which possibly gets undermined later.
Yeah, possibly.
We don't know for sure. It's a bit up in the air. But, you know, rules of storytelling, it almost certainly something happened.
Well, I mean, if anything, her side is not in good shape right now.
Yeah. during that bank scene, they bring up another bank. Like, the banker from the Iron Bank loaned money from a different bank. It's like this pyramid scheme in Westeros where they're all, where's the money going? I don't know. Yeah. Like, everyone's just giving it to someone else. Anyway, so that's just a very quick scene.
Yeah, so I guess let's jump to the big event.
Yep, which starts pretty easily.
Yeah, because obviously this episode is called The Spoils of War, and we cut directly to immediately after they've conquered Highgarden.
Yeah.
And they're literally taking the spoils of war.
Plates of gold, loading them up and stuff.
Yeah, and just wheeling them back to King's Landing, I guess.
Yeah, and Jaime rewards Bronn
with like a literal sack of gold.
This is like a great return for Bronn episode.
Love Bronn.
To say the least.
This is Bronn's hero moment.
Yeah, man.
Really.
They should be making songs about what he was doing this episode.
Yes.
So we get like some nice little banter between Jaime and Bronn again, which we haven't seen for a long time. It was like the return of the buddy cop bit with Jaime and Bronn.
I missed it so much.
And they're greeting Tarly's boy.
Dick. Great reaction by Bronn.
And I gotta say,
who just cackles.
I really like this Dickon.
Yeah.
There's something really likable about him because he's a young, earnest soldier just trying his best.
Yeah.
And they ask him, oh, how was your first battle? And he tries to give the right answer, which
is glorious.
Glorious. And Bronn's like, cut the shit. Like, your dad's not around. And then his face kind of falls and he's like,
I killed my friends.
Yeah, I killed my friends, essentially. I went hunting and fishing with them. And Jaime is pretty generous to him in this scene. Like, he says to him, you know, they didn't deserve to die. It was unfortunate that it had to happen.
Which continues his turn to essentially a good person.
Yeah.
You know, he has changed since Brienne, essentially.
Yeah, for sure.
And him and Cersei could not be on opposite ends of the spectrum.
They're so different, you know, right now. Even though he's still motivated by how he feels about her. But even he knows that's bad, like, obviously.
Yeah.
He's in conflict about that. And it sort of gets into even funnier where Dickon's like, yeah, and I didn't expect that smell. And Bronn has my favorite one-liner where he's like, oh, they didn't teach you that at fancy lad school. I learned that when I was 5. You know, I love these peppers of hints you get that Bronn's just had the most fucked up life.
Yeah. And you know, he just takes it. He's still like kind of a good spirited guy.
Yeah, he is. He's not like cruel.
Yeah, he's seen some shit, literally.
Yeah. But he's not like a bully like so many other characters are. He just wants to be paid. He just wants some money. I like how he wants the castle. Like, he wants Highgarden Castle.
He wants Highgarden.
Yeah.
And Jaime's like, you know, they're going to take it immediately.
Yeah, and I like Jaime's indignation where he's like, I just gave you a lot of money. You know.
Yeah.
Come on.
I love that line where he's sending the gold back and he says, we always pay our debts. And Bronn goes, everyone but me, I guess.
Yeah. He feels a bit of pity for himself. It's like, you're getting so much gold.
Love Bronn. And they're just, you know, chilling.
They're having like a good time.
Yeah. And suddenly you hear like,
Bronn hears something and he's like, hang on, everybody. And I didn't know whether it was the flapping of wings or the galloping of horses.
Because you hear the galloping.
Yeah.
But then you also see the sky darken.
Yes.
And you're just like, obviously, first thing that comes to mind, you know, dragon.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, that's not it. And in a way, it's more terrifying to see a horde of Dothraki.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just like crazy. They haven't been in battle for essentially months. And they're Dothraki.
Never meet a Dothraki in an open field.
Yeah.
And they're in Highgarden, like the openest field possible.
It looks like they belong there.
Yeah. They're dominating. They're coming at them. Like, I love how the camera lingers there while they slowly fill the horizon.
Yeah.
The horses and all of them.
The colors of the Lannister shields are very beautiful, and just seeing the, like, oh, shields and arrows or whatever, and just seeing them all on a straight line was really, like, a cool imagery. And also seeing the soldiers behind them shiver. They're trembling with fear.
Yeah.
They've never seen something like this before. They're not wildlings.
Yeah.
They're not armed soldiers that they're used to. They're almost as mythical looking as a dragon.
Yeah. There's something they've never seen before, like you've said, you know. And they're making these intimidating noises.
Yeah.
Like this Native American noise. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like kind of thing. And they're standing on their horses.
Amazing.
You know, they're like surfing on their
horses.
They're
not holding back.
No.
This is their time to shine.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, this is every Tuesday.
Yeah, this is what we signed up for.
Yeah.
We're doing it. They're so thirsty for their blood. But then, overhead.
Yeah, because Bronn says to Jaime, go back to King's Landing now.
Yeah, you're not like infantrymen. Yeah. You don't need to be here.
And he's like, no, we can hold them back.
I like how Jaime says, like, I'm not leaving my men here.
Just another sign that he's...
good guy.
Good guy.
Yeah.
And right on cue, as he said, we can hold them back.
Then...
a shriek.
That's right.
Then Danny...
yeah.
Riding high.
Yep.
On Drogon.
Literally. And that magical word, Dracarys. And then the dragon just spews.
Jets. It jets.
A great stream of fire.
We're both making
hand gestures because it's so beautiful.
I think you can imagine what we're doing. We just...
the one stream of fire just blows apart the middle of the Lannister formation.
They are burnt to crisp.
Instantly. It's not even a question. It lingers on the fire. And then, out of hell, the Dothraki just ride through the fire.
Right. Through the fire. Yeah. As if...
striking image.
A coordinated attack.
Yeah.
They just speed through and just slaughters.
Yeah. And there was this one great little moment of the Dothraki trampling a charred Lannister corpse.
Yeah. Did and you notice it that? Just faded away.
Yeah. Just crumbled.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't shy about what fire does to people. I think that's one of my favorite bits about this sequence is that we're kind of given an empowered point of view when we see from Dany, her burning the Lannister soldiers and the horses and the carriages and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's video game awesome. It doesn't look like a video game, but you feel very powerful watching it.
Yeah.
And then in the next shot, you're in hell. There's just ash and smoke and charred corpses.
Yeah, literally it puts Jaime and Bronn in the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
It's that scene, yeah, but in Game of Thrones, because people are burning, people are getting slaughtered.
And these two warriors are panicking and confused. They're just trying to survive, really.
Yeah, there's a moment where it kind of slow motion and it's just Jaime standing there
and he's
smoke.
Seeing people burning.
Yeah.
And you just can't help but think he killed a king to prevent something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and he's seeing it happen.
He's scared.
Yeah, every right to be. I mean, there was this one bit of a burning soldier calling himself in the lake and he's third degree burns, but he's not dead. And
yeah.
It's he's going to die painfully and slowly now. It's not just a quick incineration for some of them.
Yes.
Some of them are going to die horribly. And, let's continue with Bronn, I guess, because the camera does kind of follows him as he's navigating just the ash and the smoke. Can't see anything. And there's a screech, which, you know, the dragon is going to spew its fire again, but you don't see the dragon. He can't see it because there's so much smoke.
Yeah.
And he just narrowly avoids another jet of fire and it burns someone else.
That's right.
And he has to dig a sword out of a random corpse to just fight the Dothraki.
Yeah, and then there's one Dothraki that sets his sights on Bronn.
Yeah.
And the scene that plays out, I feel like it's kind of like a tracking shot.
Yeah,
and that
it is
he's
almost
running through his precious bag of gold.
Yeah, because that's the only reason he's there.
It's this amazing scene where he's riding his horse against the Dothraki.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what's going to happen? He throws a knife at him. And the Dothraki deflects it.
Yeah.
And then he gets out another sword. And the Dothraki slices the leg of his horse.
Oh,
and
that
he
poor
tips
horse.
Over.
Hoof goes flying.
And you're reminded, this is the Dothraki's hood.
Yeah.
This kind of warfare, you cannot win.
Even someone like Bronn is, severely outmatched in a situation like that.
And the gold pours out in slow motion.
Yeah.
And I was worried because it almost plays
was a goner.
It plays like a death scene.
Yeah, it does.
You know that moment where you're kind of relishing in, okay, this character is dying.
And it's the perfect moment for Bronn to die because
it is.
In Game of Thrones, when big characters die, it's because of some fatal flaw or some weakness.
Yeah.
And his weakness is his money.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's going after the money and he's being chased and, you know, it's like doom. But, you know, he gets the drop on the Dothraki in a pretty magnificent way.
Amazing. He goes into this tent and the Dothraki opens and he's holding the scorpion, right?
Yep.
Which is...
the dragon killer.
The genius plan Qyburn comes up with, which is, I got this super thing that we can kill dragons with a giant arrow.
What if it's a bow and arrow, but bigger?
But, just huge.
Yeah, just, you know, fit it for a dragon. Also, speaking of bow and arrows, remember when they let loose a whole bunch of arrows at Drogon? like so many, and then Drogon deflects it with his chest like it's nothing.
Drogon flies into the arrows just to be like, you think this is going to stop me?
Yeah. It's like, wow, arrows are really pathetic against Drogon. Why you shouldn't even bother.
Yeah, I guess in another context, they would have been successful because...
Oh, of course. What else are they going to do?
Yeah.
It's in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, they got bow and arrows.
And Jaime's giving the right orders.
Yeah.
It's just not working.
And then Bronn actually gets to the scorpion because Jaime says, go to it. And Bronn's like, you do it. Because Bronn just wants to live. He doesn't care. But Jaime's like, one hand, idiot. You know, how can I do that?
I love that in the midst of this chaos, there's room for that moment of levity. That's just like, oh, fine, I'll get that scorpion.
It's just part of how the sequence masterfully plays with your emotions, because literally one second you're like so in awe of her burning everybody.
Yeah.
And the next you're like horrified and you want Bronn and Jaime to get out of there. And I think a big part of that is because when we've seen the dragons in action before, it's literally against like slave owners.
And people we just don't care about.
We want them like, fine, fuck it, die.
Yeah, we just want to see people burn.
Yeah, this is the first time where we're seeing the dragons in action against like at least two people we care about.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Jaime, I'd say people are half and half.
Jaime?
Like, yeah, I feel like it's divided a bit. But Bronn is universal, I feel like.
Yes.
And Bronn, so that's why, wisely... A lot of the ground level is focused on Bronn, and he gets, like, the big moments, like, when he finally gets on the scorpion and he's loading it up.
It's such a tense moment.
Yes.
This is, in my opinion, better than the Battle of the Bastards, because we are rooting for... we're rooting for.
Both of them at different points.
When he was aiming at Daenerys, I was thinking... I literally do not know what I want to happen.
Yeah,
do I want him to shoot her or do I not?
And it's so tight. You know what I thought was going to happen? I thought he'd get the dragon and the dragon would get him.
Yeah, the dragon would crash into him.
Or like burn him, like let loose before he got hit by the... So they'd hit each other at the same time, essentially. Yeah.
So what actually happens is what I expected to happen, which is, good luck moving that arrow around while the dragon is flying like left and right.
Yeah.
Which is, you know.
He does it at the right time because Daenerys makes the rounds.
Yeah.
So she does a lap. So he's loading up the weapon when she's like far away again, building momentum.
He was trying to aim for the mouth. Dragon's mouth.
Like, as you would. You'd want to get the weakest point, which would be the skull.
But then it's flying.
It's hard. It's so amazing that he even hit it.
Yeah.
First try.
Exactly. And Dany plunges.
Oh, gets it in the shoulder.
And you're like, holy shit. I mean, you know Dany's not going to die.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't look good for her in that moment because she falls from a great height.
Yeah. Even though you know she's not going to die, you still feel like, oh shit, will she?
Yeah, exactly. You're in doubt for a moment.
Yeah.
It's so gripping.
And then, you know, Drogon, as dependable as always.
Yeah.
He's like, not today.
Yeah. Yep. And so they land on the shore beach area. Even when, like, Dany's pulling the thing out of Drogon, and Drogon just lets loose this scream that I felt really bad for the dragon.
Yeah.
It's pure scream of agony. It looks so horrible, you know, her digging out that arrow, because he's never been hurt like that before.
Yeah, no.
And he's still, like, a child, essentially. Because he's only, like, you know, a few
years
old.
He's probably, like, college age, I think.
Yeah. Well, dragons are very ancient.
Yeah,
so
true.
It's almost like a mum picking a prickle out of a kid's foot.
It's a nice
for the first
imagery.
Time. It is. It's, like, touching. I don't know. Even during the blood and death and chaos, I thought it was really lovely.
Just the contrast of the whiteness of Daenerys.
Yeah.
In the midst of all the dark, you know, Drogon's dark.
Yeah.
And them just being in line of sight of Jaime.
Yes. At this point, Jaime sees his chance.
Yeah, and we see it too because it was like, you see how vulnerable Dany actually is without her dragon.
You literally are in his thought where he's thinking, this might never happen again.
I can't kill her.
Yeah, if like now or probably never.
He's probably thinking, I'm going to die here.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll kill Dany.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point to introduce Tyrion where like he's seeing Jaime for the first time since Jaime let him out of prison. And they departed on good terms, obviously.
Yeah.
I thought there was another interesting line where the Dothraki says to Tyrion, your people are shit at fighting. And you're reminded again of the semi-split nature of Tyrion, where he's like, he doesn't want his family to die just by virtue of the Dothraki calling them your people.
That's true.
You're sort of reminded, yeah, Tyrion is still sort of... It is.
There are his people.
And the way he's sort of surveying the battle, you're in his point of view for a sec, and it's the same point of view that Jaime has when he sees people burning. Like,
yeah.
He's not happy to see that. Like, he's saddened.
He doesn't like war.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. Especially not something as horrifying as that would be.
Also, I feel like that line by that Dothraki leader is a little unfair because dragons.
Yeah, exactly. But Dothraki aren't fair people. Yeah, they're assholes. True. They're asshole people.
They can barely fight while they're just getting toasted.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're putting up, I'd say, a valiant fucking effort considering they were so caught off guard.
Kind of an unfair advantage.
It is unfair. But you know, that Dothraki just being cocky.
Yeah.
So Tyrion witnesses Jaime picking up the spear and charging to Daenerys.
Yeah.
And Tyrion says exactly what we're all thinking, which is, don't do it, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, like, he says, flee, you idiot.
Yeah.
Flee.
Yeah. Just on his face, you see the pit in his stomach.
Yeah.
It's such a great little subtle moment of acting, which Peter Dinklage is obviously maybe the best in the whole cast at.
Yeah.
So Jaime's charging at Daenerys.
And you think, you know, we all she think this so is
she looks so vulnerable in that moment.
She just stares at him.
Yeah,
like,
she doesn't even move.
She doesn't even know what to do.
She's frozen in fear because it's obviously like the last thing she expected.
Yeah.
You know, and then the camera kind of lurches down the Drogon's mouth.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, goodbye, Jaime Lannister. Yeah. Nice knowing you.
Yeah, and then out of fucking nowhere, Bronn?
Is it Bronn?
I think it's Bronn.
Or Dickon.
It's one of them.
I hope it's Bronn.
I think it's Bronn.
Because
though,
if it is Bronn, like, let's just crown the winner of the episode. It's Bronn.
Yeah, it's Bronn.
Well, he may lose his gold.
Yeah.
But he wins my heart.
Yeah. He's the first
Hodor
to, like,
Award.
Take it. Yeah, Hodor Award for sure. He takes down a fucking dragon.
Yeah.
Good lord. Like, he doesn't kill it, but he takes it down.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah.
It's
how many, like, people have done that? Like, probably nobody in, like, the history of...
Yeah, not one single person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it takes, like, thousands of people to at least hurt one.
Yeah. And Bronn's just, like, bravely in it, and it's so great. But anyway, so Bronn out of nowhere tackles Jaime, saves him
out
from...
out of the flames.
Yeah.
Jaime plunges.
Great shot where we see the fire over the water.
Yes.
He missed it by like half a second.
Yeah, like he...
He's so lucky.
It was close.
Yeah. But you know, he's got all that armor on and he just keeps falling.
And he just sinks. You know, at that point, it's, you don't know if it's just dramatic effect of the show or... Yeah. Because it ends and it fades into darkness and then it's just a silent closing credits.
Yes. And obviously, Jaime's not dead. I think we can say
that. Yeah, let's agree.
Yeah, I think we're going to say that the next episode he'll be Daenerys' prisoner. So that's quite a catch. Whatever Jaime's position is, he's very high up.
Yeah, and what are your thoughts on Bronn?
Bronn will be captured as well. I
hope so. Yeah, I hope he's not crisped.
No. Another thing about Game of Thrones is they're unambiguous about the deaths. Like, it doesn't happen unless you see it with your own two eyes.
Well, I mean, of course, there is the question of Stannis then. And
true.
Yeah, if you have to...
That was an odd choice in that episode to cut
it
away.
It was. Maybe it was just poor...
I think that was like a poor edit.
Yeah, it was a poor choice, I think. He is for sure dead, but they broke their own rules in that episode. But anyway, it's... Yeah. Let's not.
Yeah, the point is usually Game of Thrones will show you a death straight up. There's no ambiguity if someone dies. And though their fates are kind of like uncertain, the idea is they're defeated and now they're going to be her prisoner.
Yes.
Which I guess...
I'm excited for that to happen because just to see Tyrion and Bronn and Jaime.
Be our own Lannister reunion next episode. You know, full of reunions. In addition to obviously Jon seeing Bran and Arya again.
Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, the little preview for the next episode showed Jon back in Winterfell.
Really?
And he said Bran said they're coming.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, good.
So we've got that already happening. But also a little ominous shot in the next episode, a little preview, of Daenerys in front of Jon riding the dragon. And the dragon's like howling at Jon. I was like, I wonder if that portends to something. Because you've got other bits of dialogue where Varys says to Tyrion... You know, we need to
dissuade her, something like that. We need to tone her down.
Yeah, she's had like a real taste of power with that dragon. More than even burning the slavers, because this was like so many deaths.
She was...
So easily, comparatively to everyone else.
And this was her actually fighting with...
An army.
Yeah, she was leading this army.
Yeah, I think this will really like affect her attitude, because she listened to Tyrion twice, bad. She listens to her own advice. Wins. So now I think she's going to double down on that.
Do you think this is her listening to her own advice? Because
they were telling her, don't use the dragons, and she did.
I think this was the compromise between...
Yeah, she didn't go to, like, a populated city or anything.
Yeah, so, of course you're going to use the dragons. Yeah. I mean, why are they there
but
for?
But there are still some catastrophic effects of her using that dragon, because there was also a point of the Lannisters and the other folks loading up with, like, lots of grain.
True.
And, like, winter's coming.
Yeah.
So that's, like, an important thing. And she literally blew all that up. Like, she destroyed, like, valuable...
That's true.
...shit. Like, there's a consequence to her using those dragons. She doesn't know the consequence of that, but I think that's, like, an important bit of foreshadowing where she just sees victory, but obviously there's some collateral damage that she's not fully aware of.
Do you think the show is actually planting that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, like, some Mad Queen shit. That's what I think is going to happen. That's the tension, though, because Missandei rightfully says... She's a good person, you know.
Yeah.
We chose her, like, and she does treat them with respect, but she does have these dragons, and she is very passionate, apocalyptically passionate about what's hers.
But I feel like, yes, but I feel like she has also shown restraint.
She has shown massive restraint.
She has
I think it's attention.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's going to be. It's not going to be so easy, like, her path.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to actually give in to the madness.
Yeah.
Throughout this.
I think she'll be pulled back from a brink, but this sort of pushes her closer to that.
It's a first taste.
Because it shows her she's right in doing what she thinks she should do.
I don't know. I feel like she could learn two lessons from it, because
ultimately,
she's learning that she is not indestructible.
She did learn that, because the dragon did get
hurt. She almost died.
Yeah.
That's she true. Almost died. So yeah. It depends on the next episode.
Yeah, I kind of backed up with the Mad Queen thing, because the way that it's previewed for the next episode is people are worried about her. They're saying, we need to stop this, you know, it's bad. Even like her own people are like, I'm saying
she was justified in this case.
Yeah, she was. But she was, just because she'd be justified in this case doesn't mean she'd be justified again.
You're right.
But in this case, she was right.
And she didn't just make this decision willy-nilly. No. She made a rational decision.
Yeah.
She is a queen. And she should lead her army.
Yeah.
It's not like she brought three dragons.
Yeah. Like, I'm saying, I agree that she made the right decision here, but it's how she, like, reacts to this situation in future.
Yeah.
Which will determine how far is she willing to push her power. Because we don't know yet. We don't know how she'll react to this. I think it's sort of interesting that she might go down, like, a fiery path. You know? That would be cool. You know, she's not an angel. In terms of all the characters on the show, she feels the most... as well as Jon Snow, like, the most least likely to be evil.
She is. Well, she's more likely than Jon.
She's more likely than Jon, and I think they should sort of play into that for future episodes, because it's there. Yeah, anyway, that was a magnificent battle scene.
Yes, I think one of the best battle scenes in the show.
Where would you put it? Because for me, the Hardhome battle between Jon Snow and the Wildlings and the White Walkers.
Oh, yeah.
That's like... It's hard to judge because I've just seen this episode. You know, I'm still high off of it, essentially.
Yeah.
But the Hardhome battle, I don't know. I still feel like that might be my number one in terms of the overall show. It's tough, but I'd have to go with that one. Because just the end, the image of the Night King raising the dead, that's like enough to sort of cement it as number one.
Yeah, you know what? It's a battle between these two sequences because, when I'm thinking about the Hardhome battle... The thing that makes me excited thinking back are the reveals.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, Valyrian steel works against White Walkers.
Yeah.
And, oh, he can revive dead people.
And it's just that this battle obviously had fire on its side to evoke hellish imagery.
Yeah.
But the White Walker one, there was just this escalating feeling of being overwhelmed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at first you think it's just a quick skirmish, because that's just, it starts kind of small. Yes. Then it literally turns into an avalanche, and it was, it came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't expect that. Whereas this was like, I kind of knew this was going to happen more.
That's true, but I feel like the power of this sequence doesn't come from surprises. It comes from the tension it builds. It still has that same avalanche effect. Just the way the Dothraki powers through, you know, you expected dragons, but... The Dothraki made this
yeah
just like a really good fight scene and just pitting two main characters against each other, and you're not even sure who you want to win.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I
mean, when Jon was fighting the White Walkers, you just wanted Jon to get out of there.
That's true.
And but with this one, you're like, I don't know.
I'm changing moment to moment.
You're just sitting there at the mercy of this chaos.
Yeah.
And you're just hoping that everything turns out right. And you know what? I think it did.
It was the payoff to, like, when you just first see those dragons born on her shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of in the back of your mind where, man, imagine when they're fully grown and they're burning those Lannisters. Because in season one, you're like, fuck the Lannisters.
Yeah.
So you take dragons. Maybe dragons can, like, take them down.
Yeah.
And this was, like, a beautiful payoff to that.
Yeah, and it also plays back into what I think is a kind of a theme in this season, which is giving you what you want, but not in a way that you expected. You know, yeah. You wanted the dragons to go against the Lannisters, but not this one.
Not the ones you care about.
Yeah, but they're like, hey, you know, you wanted this, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, shit.
You're right. It does make you pay for indulging in the spectacle, like I said, by showing you the point of view of, like, being empowered and then showing Ash and Brown and Hell and cooked meat.
Yeah.
You know, terrifying.
Yeah. Before we move into theories.
Yes.
I want to bring us back to Dragonstone, into that cave with Dany and Jon.
Yes.
Jon sees the opportunity to convince Daenerys, you know, to say, hey, now do you see why it's important? We need to band together.
Hey, the children and the men fought together, so now we got to fight together.
And for a second, we thought, oh, she's on his side now because she said, I'll help you.
Yeah.
If you bend a knee. And he goes, my people will not follow
a southern ruler. Yeah.
And thanks to Reddit, they caught that this is a direct parallel to the beginning of season 5 where Stannis caught the wildlings.
Yeah.
And is forcing Mance Rayder to bend a knee to him.
Yes.
And he sends Jon in to kind of persuade him to do it. Well, Mance says, my people, the wildlings, would rather die than bow down to a southern king.
And then Jon says something like, what, is your pride more important than your people's survival? Which is what Daenerys tells Jon.
It's the exact same line.
Yeah, he finds himself in Mance's position.
Yeah, and she says literally every word for word the same line, is your pride more important than the survival of your people?
Yeah, but I think she's wrong there because it's not really about pride. It's more about that they've just been hurt too many times. How can they trust, like, a southern ruler, let alone one with her name?
And also, obviously, she's driven by pride also.
Yeah, exactly. There are different standards for Dany, though.
Yeah, of course, because she's mother of dragons.
She's mother of dragons. You know,
queen of the Andals and the First Men.
It's like, hey, fucking
Rimbreaker of chains.
Yeah, Westeros me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, I just thought a good callback.
So, will Jon do something different in this position, you wonder? Like,
do you think he will bend a knee? Because, you know, obviously things didn't end well with Mance. He chose not to.
But the stakes are so much higher. It's not just a group of people. It's the whole freaking world.
Yeah. And the thing with Jon is he always tries to do the right thing. And the people who he's doing the right thing for
don't see it.
Never appreciates it. Yeah. They literally kill him.
He's in the same position where he was letting the wildlings in for the Night's Watch.
Yes.
So this is like this. He's in the same position being the King of the North, where if I do this, my people could turn against me. Like, again, I've already been through something like that.
Speaking of King of the North, I would also be remiss not to bring up the fact that Davos is still workshopping John's title, where he goes, so this is King of the North? No, King John? King Snow?
Yeah, and then John just shoots him down by saying, yeah, it doesn't matter. Because John doesn't, you know, care.
He doesn't give a shit.
About that kind of stuff. But I like that's on Davos's mind.
Yeah, he's
seething about, this is Jon Snow, the king. Like, he's just so embarrassed about that moment. He's like, I've got to come up with, like, a title or something.
Yeah, here's my notebook.
You know, what else am I doing? I'm just standing here in these scenes. I gotta think of a good title to intro him. Because I'm the hype man. That's
yeah, great. Exactly. Davos is not a learned individual.
No,
it's not his strong suit. He literally learned how to read from a little girl.
Yeah.
But he's trying.
He's trying.
He's trying.
He always tries.
So I think we've announced who is the recipient of our Hodor Award, which we give to the winner or like the best character of each episode.
It's the Bronn.
It's Bronn for you?
Yeah, I would never have thought that. If you told me what happened in this episode, I would have been like, oh, Daenerys. Yeah. What do you mean? Of course it's Daenerys, but...
In some ways, Daenerys did win.
Yeah.
But Bronn.
Bronn's time to shine in this episode, baby. And it's been like a long time since like we've seen some good Bronn scenes as well. So it's like absence makes the heart grow fond.
Yeah, love your work, Bronn.
Yeah, banter was more on point than ever with that fancy lad school crack.
Amazing.
Yeah, so good.
Who do we give the Jorah Mormont Award? Who's the loser here?
Your Jorah Mormont.
I don't know if we are the same people, but for me it's Littlefinger.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was exactly my character.
He literally does lose in this episode by failing to get a foothold again with the Stark children. And I just do get the sense this season that the writers don't quite know what to do with him anymore. I just have that feeling. I don't know. Maybe there could be like a magnificent payoff to what's happening. And, you know, of course that could happen. But I just do get the sense that he's just filling time now.
Yeah. I think they're going somewhere.
I mean, I hope so.
They're being so economical with their scenes that...
Everything must matter.
Yeah, it would be crazy for them to just dangle Littlefinger's story like he just rides off into the sunset.
Yeah, which of course he won't do. It's not in his nature. But yeah, Littlefinger gets the Jorah moment for me this episode.
Yes, me too. I'm glad we agreed on the two awards. You know, we don't have to split.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was pretty clear.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, maybe Jaime Lannister is also a loser, but he's a winner by surviving a dragon attack.
Yeah, he tries to take it out.
He did. He did.
That's valiant.
Yeah.
Like, Jaime was at his most Prince Charming-esque.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
He was nice to his people and he was, like, brave.
Yeah, he gets the participation award.
Yeah, for sure. He's, like, second.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap it up with some book theories or, well, theories in general. Yeah. Did you want to bring something up?
Yeah, well, I'll go from book because there's an interesting tidbit in the book that I just remembered in relation to this, which changes the trajectory of a couple of characters, specifically Jaime and Tyrion, because in the book, it's pretty significant that they depart on really terrible terms. It's like, it goes much the same in the book with Jaime letting Tyrion out before he's executed and stuff like that. But Tyrion's state of mind is far more bitter at this point in the books, because like Jaime asks him straight up, did you kill Joffrey? You know, I need to know for sure. And Tyrion is like so mad at his family and bitter at everyone that he lies and says, yes, of course I killed your son and I loved it. And that's how they diverge.
Yeah.
And then obviously Tyrion kills Tywin and then Jaime doesn't say much about it, but he says, you know, I swear to God, next time I see him, I'm going to kill him. But obviously in the show, they departed in good terms.
Yeah.
And we don't quite know how Jaime feels about Tyrion killing Tywin. Like that's something that hasn't really been expressed in the show yet.
We've never seen a shot of him being angry.
No.
Because, you know, in some ways, maybe Jaime doesn't like his father also.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't express any particular emotion about it.
Yeah.
So I just feel like, in terms of where the book and the show diverge in interesting paths, I think Jaime and Tyrion's reunion next episode or wherever it may be will be more heartwarming, I guess. Like, it'll be nicer.
We'll see.
I mean, I don't know for sure, though.
Maybe not after what...
After what the Jaime dragon went action. Through. Yeah, exactly. He's like, you're allied with fucking the Mad the
King's, devil. Yeah, the Mad King's daughter.
Because from his point of view, we got to say again, it was like the devil at work, you know?
Yeah.
And to see Tyrion allied with her is interesting. It's kind of fascinating that the baggage of Tyrion not lying about killing Joffrey is not there.
Yes.
For this reunion. So I was like, that was kind of on my mind because I haven't thought about that in a while. In terms of theories, there's this theory going around. I just heard this yesterday, just before we recorded this, that I might be late to this.
Okay.
I feel I'm nervous saying this because maybe everyone knows and I'm just the idiot who's the last to hear. It could be embarrassing. But
go ahead.
That the three-eyed raven, the old man,
yeah.
That's Bran in the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that what everyone knows?
Yeah, it's like it's been going since like last season.
Jeez, I'm so late to the party on that. I don't know quite how that would work, but that would still make some sense to me.
I don't subscribe to that theory, and I don't want it to be the case just because, you know, why do we really care whether or not Bran is the old three-eyed raven? It's going to be too diluted plot-wise.
It gets to like kind of a interesting idea that really Bran's just a plot device at this point.
Yeah.
That's why he has no personality.
You know what? It could be interesting because essentially then Bran is Hodor, but in a grander scale.
Yes.
Because, you know, he's predestined.
Yeah.
What he has done is what he will do.
Yeah, he's stuck in a sort of loop of his own making.
But it doesn't make sense that he's the three-eyed raven, so he's a Targaryen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because that's who the three-eyed raven is, right? He used to be a Targaryen, you know, king, or like he was in line to be one,
yeah,
or something.
Is that true?
I think so.
I think you're thinking of the guy who was at the Night's Watch and he was the old man, Aemon, because but he opted to remain at the Night's Watch.
I knew that, and that's not what I mean. I think the three-eyed raven goes way back.
Yeah.
In my deep Wikipedia-esque research that I've done, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong, so...
Well, if that's true, then it can't be Bran.
Because it'll just muddy.
It would make no sense.
I mean, it could still happen because...
In the show, I don't think they've specified the old man's origins.
Yeah, exactly. So it could still happen, and I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, we just need to get to the point where Bran walks into a dragon, because that's obviously going to happen. The three-eyed raven tells Bran, you're going to fly one day.
See, that's another one of those, like, prophetic interpretations where it's like, is that what he really means? I mean, he could just mean, hey, I'll teach you how to warg into birds.
But he said it so dramatically. It can't just mean, hey, you're going to warg into a pigeon.
Why doesn't he say, I'll teach you how to breathe fire?
Because that's too on the nose, Howie. We need to leave a little bit of room where there's a little bit of room, but we know what he's talking about. And I think Bran's going to walk into a dragon.
Okay. I mean, I'm not closed off to the idea, but I don't like that we're basing it on that line.
I think it'll happen. It's just got to happen. You've got to pay off that line. And you can't have it by him, like, walking into, like, an eagle or something. But it could be fly, as in, fly, you'll do great things.
Yeah.
You'll impact the course of human history. Which, you know...
Maybe he'll fly through time.
Flying through time. Like, literally in the cosmos. Maybe he means something like... Your mind will fly out of your fucking skull and you'll just be a shell of who you were.
I think that's exactly what he meant.
That's coming true. It's like, I wish you specified that because holy fuck.
Yeah.
This is scary.
Yeah, so just to be clear, so the theory is...
The three-eyed raven is Bran in the future and he teaches himself and...
Yeah, because he said, oh, I need you to become me.
Yeah. But I thought it meant in a sense, you're the next three-eyed raven.
Yeah, I mean, it's already that. Okay, why I don't believe it is that's already happened. Bran is already stating, hey, I'm the three-eyed raven.
Yeah, exactly.
So the reveal's done.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Kind of idea of Bran being the three-eyed raven feels sort of like a fun fan service-y thing that doesn't serve a story point.
That's what I mean. It's just, why do we care if he's the three-eyed raven?
And he teaches himself, because you wouldn't be saying anything there that you didn't already say with Hold the Door.
Yeah, exactly.
That purpose was already there. And like, you're doing it again, and it's like, oh, it's the same thing with a different coat of paint.
And the thing is, we don't really give a shit about the person of the three-eyed raven.
Well, the whole point is that they're not a person.
Yeah.
They're just a watcher or a seer of stuff.
Yeah.
The whole idea is they have no motivation or personality.
Yeah.
They're just observer, and someone's going to fill that post. But yeah, obviously, Bran is going to be the one to tell everyone about the White Walkers coming, because that was in the preview again as well, where Bran tells Jon.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bran is a good sort of connective tissue that'll speed up the battle with the White Walkers.
The next episode too, the name being East Watch,
which is where the wildlings are.
Where the wildlings are, where possibly the Hound is heading, Beric Dondarrion.
Where the White Walker action is.
Yes.
So expect to see that. You got fire this episode, next episode's ice. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see it.
Well, do you think that'll actually happen?
Like a battle?
Yeah.
I don't know if there'll be a battle, but I feel like...
Maybe there's going to be a battle every episode.
That's possible. There's only three left this season.
Yeah.
So time is like, you know, running out. Really running out. I can't believe we're already over halfway through. But a battle episode, I wouldn't rule that out. They really need to reestablish the White Walkers as scary again.
Mm.
We know they're scary from that Hardhome battle, but you need like a fresh wave to convince, like, all of Westeros, we got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, so they got to do something devastating very soon.
Winterfell.
Winterfell. Knock down the wall or something like that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Is that our prediction, that the wall comes down at the end of the season?
Either at the end of the season or just before the end, like at the end of episode 6 or something like that.
I see, yeah, so this season.
Yeah, okay, this is like a vague prediction I'll just make.
Let's do it.
I have a feeling at the end of episode 6, the wall comes down. The beginning of episode 7, there's like a time jump.
Really? You think they're going to go that?
I don't know. I'm going to put it just 15%, which is not nothing, but it's just like a small hunch.
Why?
I don't know, because it's unexpected. It's really, it's kind of unexpected. So I don't know. Because I feel like the predictable thing to do would for the wall to fall at the end of this season.
Yeah, you think they'll pull a, it'll fall like before we expected it.
Yeah. And there'll be like, we'll see some massive consequence down the line this season with that. Because this season's already been pretty funny with time as it is.
True.
So that would be like a, whoa, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, next episode being Eastwatch.
Yes.
Which is where the wall is, right?
It extends to Eastwatch.
Yeah, so maybe next episode the wall goes down.
See, I was going to say, but I was like, I don't know. Maybe. Like, I'm less confident about
that. Because if they go through next episode...
Yeah.
Why, like, what's the point of still having the wall be a thing? They'd already be through.
Yeah, that's true. It's just they'd come through quicker, I guess, because there's nothing there. I think they're only getting through when it falls down.
Yeah, okay.
So that's my prediction, one of them. Wall's obviously coming down. If it doesn't come down this season, that'll be strange to me.
No one died this episode.
That's true, there were near misses.
Yeah, no one important. Well, really, no one died.
But that's weird for this show, because usually, like, during a big battle, someone you give a shit about dies. Yeah,
maybe not an episode 3 battle.
Oh, true, I mean...
someone gets captured, maybe.
That's true, it's still sort of only halfway through. People to die yet. And we're at the point where, like, any death is pretty significant.
Look, the Starks are in a precarious situation right now.
I feel like everybody is. Like, no one is in a good position.
I think Dany's not going to die for sure.
No.
In the next episode.
No. Yeah. I don't think so. Tyrion, Jon, and Dany are not dying this season. I feel like that's not happening.
Yeah.
Everyone else is fair game.
All right.
I think that wraps it up for us.
Yeah, I think so. This was a doozy of an episode. Very exciting. I have faith in this season now.
Yeah, I always did. But this just sort of cements, okay, they're not going to hold back on the spectacle.
Well, actually, it cements for me that they're not going to hold back on the quiet character moments.
I got that idea last episode, though.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, yeah, I'm sure this show's know where its bread is buttered.
Because they're even giving it more of a feature now. The fire battle gets the same amount of screen time as the Stark reunion.
See, the Stark reunion gets even more screen
even
time.
More screen time. Yeah, it does. So, nice.
They're very, like, clever with where they put the big stuff and where they put the big stuff that's in the character moments.
Yeah, and also breaking the record for the shortest episode of the show so far.
You know, this breaks another record.
What?
Which is the most amount of burned bodies in, like, a Hollywood production.
Really?
Yeah, literally, it is that.
Holy shit.
People on fire. This has the most of it. If you're a fucking pyromaniac, you know, this episode is like fucking porn for you.
Well, too bad I'm not, I guess.
I wish I was. I would have enjoyed it even more than I already did, which would be mind-blowing.
All right. Well, on that note, stay tuned for our next episode where I will be talking about episode 5, Eastwatch. So thanks for joining me, Reese.
Yeah, love being here.
Until next time.
Bye.
See?